Oakland Art Murmur is a coalition of art and cultural venues dedicated to increasing popular awareness of and participation in the arts in Oakland, with an emphasis on visual art. They promote visual art in Oakland through collective marketing and outreach efforts, and our monthly First Friday events, which are open to the public and attended by hundreds of local and visiting art enthusiasts. The First Friday Art Walk has grown to include street performances, one-night-only art installations, activists raising money and awareness for local social service organizations, and political initiatives. For more information about the Oakland Art Murmur, go online at www.oaklandartmurmur.com.
This public service announcement is brought to you by your friends at Mutiny Radio.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, X minus 1. Fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X minus one. Tonight's story, No Contact. It was in the year of 1982 that spacemen first discovered the Great Galactic Barrier. In the past 10 years, rocket travel to the moon and the nearer planets had become commonplace. And then men fixed their sights on a more distant star, the remote planet known as Volta. 5 exploratory ships went out, and none came back, each in turn disappearing mysteriously at the same vanishing point, at an invisible wall somewhere in the vast outer reaches that became known as the Wrecker of Spaceships, the Galactic Reef. And yet, the explorers refused to admit defeat. It was on June the 2nd, 1987, that the rocket Star Cloud made ready for takeoff, the 6th to attempt to crack the barrier and win through to Volta.
Now hear this. Condition green. 2 minutes to blast off. Condition green. 2 minutes to blast off.
Well, Lewis, this is it. I don't suppose you'll be needing the ship's doctor up here on the bridge during blast off.
I think not, Smitty. There's little chance of acceleration bends in these new overdrive ships.
I'll be in my office then, counting vitamin pills if you need me. It's only a few steps. Good luck, Lewis.
Thank you, Smitty. Lieutenant Collier.
Yes, sir?
You're relieved. You'd better get down to navigation control and take over.
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant.
Yes, sir?
We've never flown together before. This is your first flight in a space vessel as big as the Star Cloud.
Yes, sir, but I was trained in oversized jobs at the Naval Academy.
Well, if you're half as good a navigator as your father was, you'll do fine.
Thank you, sir. Did you ship out with my father?
I served under him on one of the first rocket runs to the moon.
I see.
I almost went along on his last trip to the barrier. Too bad about that.
Yes, sir.
That's all, Collier.
Lieutenant Paulison.
Get me the ground control tower on the field. I want to talk to Colonel Harrison.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir. I've patched in the bridge speaker.
Colonel Harrison?
Yes, Captain?
We're standing by for takeoff in 30 seconds.
Good. The field's cleared of all personnel. We'll try to reestablish radio contact immediately after takeoff. In any event, there'll be a 24-hour ground monitor.
Fine.
Good luck. Hope you make it.
Thank you. Bridge to navigation control.
Have control, Collier.
Ready, Lieutenant?
We're ready, Captain. The course is in the integrator for takeoff at 1,200 hours.
All right. Stand by for blastoff. Bridge to engine room. Fire up your rocket chambers. Take off at exactly 1,200 hours. I'll read you off. 20 seconds. 19. 18. 17. 16. Hold it. Revoke all orders. Who turned in that alarm?
Paulson, sir, we've uncovered a stowaway.
Stowaway? Where?
Hiding in sick bay. Dr. Smithson found
him. Have him brought up to the bridge. Engine room, kill your rockets and stand by.
Thorson, this is Colonel Harrison in ground control. What's holding you up?
Trouble.
What's the matter with you?
What's the matter with you? There's a stowaway aboard.
Stowaway?
Yes, I thought your men were supposed to police this base. What's the matter with you?
All right, Captain, take it easy.
You know what this delay can do to us, don't you? 1 minute later, takeoff can throw us a million miles off course. We'll have to reintegrate the whole works.
Well, look, how long do you think it'll take?
Don't bother for me for a while. I'm busy. Stupid idiot.
Captain Thorson?
Yes, come in, Smitty.
Here's your stowaway.
I'll court-martial the... Oh, Charlie.
Can you use a good radio man, Skipper?
Well, I see you two have met.
Met? Skipper and me made 50 trips to the moon together. Didn't we, Skipper?
Charlie, if you wanted to come along, why didn't you volunteer?
I did, Skipper. They turned me down.
Well, what's wrong with you?
Acceleration bends. They said my arteries wouldn't stand another trip.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But they're wrong, Skipper. I got one more good trip in me. Listen, Skipper, you know that these green kids, they don't know the first thing about space radio operation. Now, you put a man like me on, and I'll be getting you bedtime stories from Mars.
Charlie, you know the regulations as well as I do. I can't take you much as I'd like to.
Colonel Harrison will murder me for this.
Well, I'm sorry, Charlie. I'll have you put aground. I'll tell you what, I'll ask Harrison to put you on his ground radio contact, and it'll seem as if you're right here with us.
He won't do it, sir.
Well, he'd better. I'll have him busted to corporal for letting you sneak aboard. Look, Charlie, you better be off. Paulison.
Yes, sir.
I'm sending this man aground. Give him time to clear the launching platform.
Yes, sir.
So long, Charlie. I'm sorry.
Good luck, Skipper.
I thought you were going to have him drawn and quartered.
If it had been anyone else, I would have, Smitty. But Charlie, well, he's kind of special. He's been with me since my first command when we began the regular run to the moon. And if he wanted to come along this time, well, it's only through loyalty to me.
You know, Lewis, I didn't realize it before, but you're almost human.
Captain Thorson, Nav Control, call you.
Oh, yes, Lieutenant. How badly are we fouled up? Can you recalculate the course, or shall I cancel the takeoff?
I've already plotted a new course on the integrator, sir. If we take off in exactly 30 seconds, we'll need to correct for only a 1 degree deflection. I can do that before we breach the stratosphere.
That's quick work. Are you sure?
Yes, sir. Positive, sir.
All right, Collier. I'm putting it in your hands. We'll blast off on your signal. Bridge to engine room. Prepare to blast off on navigator's signal. How are we doing, Collier?
Coming on the bearing, sir. That's 4, 3, 2, 0. We've intersected the course vector.
Good work, Collier.
Course is corrected, sir. We're ready to go into atomic overdrive anytime you say.
All right. Stand by.
Yes, sir.
Now hear this. Prepare for maximum acceleration. Bridge to engine room. Kill your rockets.
Rockets out.
Fire up number one cyclotron.
Number one ready.
Fire up number two.
Number two ready.
Withdraw your dampening rods.
Fission chamber ready. Blast tubes cleared. All generators operating at capacity. Take it over, sir.
Go into overdrive at the count of zero. 3 seconds, Mr. Collier.
Three.
Two.
Two.
One.
One.
Zero.
Zero.
How are we doing, Collier?
On course, sir. She's running hot and true.
My compliments, Lieutenant. This job would have done your father credit, and he was the best navigation officer I ever saw.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Start your gyros. Put her on robot control. All right, the bridge is yours, Mr. Collier. If you need me, I'll be in Dr. Smithson's office.
Yes, sir.
Well, Lewis, I see you got us off the ground.
You can thank young Collier for that. Chip off the old block.
You knew his father?
As a matter of fact, I knew him very well. First-rate spaceman.
Well, is he the one
who... Yes, he was lost in the galactic barrier on the second ship we sent out to Volta.
Lewis, just what do you think this galactic barrier is?
Oh, your guess is as good as mine, Doc. All I know is that five ships have gone into it, and none of them have come back out.
You think it's a nit? How about Mestrovic's theory that it's a time warp in space? That the ships reach it and slip into another dimension?
I think that's a lot of rubbish. My theory is that the galactic barrier is nothing more than a radioactive layer of some kind.
Why do you say that?
Well, we know that radar signals bounce off it like they were hitting an invisible glass wall. And we know that it destroys our ships and crews in some way. There's no other logical explanation.
What makes you think we can get through it, Lewis?
Because we're ready for it. The others weren't. The entire hull of this ship is completely shielded with lead. We can crack through any radioactive cloud ever detected. Besides, we're equipped with some new UHF radio devices that should enable us to maintain radio contact with Earth. Nothing can happen. Absolutely nothing.
Now, who are you trying to convince?
Myself, I suppose.
Lewis, you've had your share of glory. First skipper to reach the moon back in 1962. You could have retired. Why are you risking this trip?
Five ships are missing. Men like Prentice, Margotson, young Collier's father. I'm tired of seeing good men fed into that meat chopper.
Then why are we going to Volta?
We haven't any choice, Smitty. We're in a race, the kind of race where men and ships are expendable. According to the Interspace Code, the first nation to reach Volta can claim it.
Well, personally, I want no part of it.
Now, Doc.
I'll have to play physician, morale builder, and mother substitute for 112 slightly nervous men.
And your morale doesn't sound too good, Doc.
As morale officer, I can state without fear of contradiction, it is terrible. And something tells me, as we approach that galactic barrier, I'm not going to be alone.
Hello, Earth. Hello, Earth. Captain Thorson of the Star Cloud calling Earth.
Hello, Star Cloud. Hi, Captain.
Charlie. Well, I see they haven't court-martialed you yet.
No, sir, thanks to you.
Well, it's good to hear you. You can read us the funny papers on Sunday morning.
Right.
Now, how's our signal?
Strong. Clear as a bell.
Now, here's our log report for Colonel Harrison. You ready?
Shoot.
June 2nd, 1987. 4 weeks out from Earth. Running through. No radiation. Operation normal. Still making our approach to the galactic barrier. That's all, Charlie. See you later.
Good luck, Captain. I sure wish I was with you.
How's the morale, Smitty?
The men know we're getting closer to the barrier. They're beginning to show a little tension, Lewis.
Well, how's their physical condition? Any sickness?
About half the crew has come down with space blues.
I was afraid of that. Are they bad?
Same as usual. Lips and hands with a bluish cast. Eyes are sensitive to infrareds.
I don't know. When I first started flying these tin cans, nobody ever heard of space blues.
Well, now there's a theory it's caused by the terrific acceleration of atomic overdrive. Change in gravity affects the circulation.
What do you think?
I think it's psychosomatic. I've noticed that the same men who get space blues under tension on a ship tend to get blue coloration back on Earth when they're upset. I guess it's just an occupational disease of space navigators.
Uh-huh. You think it's just nerves, then?
Well, young Collier's got a bad case. I think it's tension from overwork.
Maybe he needs some vitamins.
Lewis, when will you realize that vitamins are not a panacea for all the troubles of mankind?
Sir, I understand that you've relieved me from duty.
Well, Dr. Smithson says you aren't looking very well, Collier. I'm giving you a rest.
Sir, I feel perfectly able to continue.
Your lips are as blue as Minnetonka.
Captain, I'd like to remain at my post.
Don't be foolhardy, Lieutenant.
I'm not being foolhardy, sir. I have a special, personal reason for wanting this expedition to reach Volta.
Your father?
Yes, sir.
You think he might still be alive?
I have to find out what happened, sir.
I think I understand. Very well, Collier. Report back to duty. What's the reading policy?
We're getting a +5 radar bounce now. It's coming off the barrier almost as fast as we sent it out.
What's the interval?
2 seconds, shortening steadily. At this rate, we'll hit the wall in the next few minutes.
All right. Alert the crew. Sound general quarters.
Now, hear this. Condition red. We are now approaching the galactic barrier. All hands to stations. All radiation detectors to be fully manned. Full security will prevail until further notice. That is all.
Paulison.
Yes, sir?
The radar bounces up to +6. We'd better try to make final contact with Earth. Is Sparks still trying to raise the base?
Yes, sir, but he's not having much luck.
Huh?
Seems to be some interference. That's the radio room now.
Yes? You got him? Well, cut in on the bridge speaker. Captain will take it from here.
Hello? Star Cloud to Earth. Can you hear me, Earth?
Hello, Skipper. I can barely read you. We're getting heavy static from Sunspot.
That's not Sunspots, Charlie. We're right on top of the galactic barrier. Getting a plus seven radar bounce. Expect to hit the barrier almost any second now.
Good luck, Skipper.
If we crack the barrier and come through still in one piece, I'll try to get back to you on the high frequency band.
Got you, Skipper. Don't worry. I'll be waiting.
So long, Charlie.
So long, Star Cloud.
Must be getting awfully close now, Captain. Echo's bouncing back so fast it's almost beating the signal.
When they go inside, hold on to your hat. That's when we run into the wall.
Any second.
Hold on.
Well, here goes nothing.
Here it comes.
Captain.
Nothing happened.
We made it.
We made it, Captain. No radiation, no time warp, no nothing. Now, the crew's gone crazy, sir.
Let them. They've earned it. Doc, can you break out a few bottles of snake bite serum for medicinal purposes?
I sure can, Lewis.
This calls for a celebration. How's your morale now?
It couldn't be better. How's yours?
Couldn't be better. What the...
Condition red. Condition red. Radiation detected. Condition red. Radiation detected.
Holy mackerel. Look at the needle on that indicator.
Paulison. Paulison.
Yes, I see it, Captain. Picking radiation like crazy.
What's it like?
Well, it's a strong impulse.
What kind?
I don't know. It's too long for a cosmic ray, too short for UHF. Whatever it is, sir, the ship is lousy.
Well, track it down, triangulate it, and make it fast. I want a directional fix.
Yes, sir.
Engine room.
Yes, sir.
We're picking up radioactivity. Is the fission chambers?
No leak here, sir.
Check your gauges.
Nothing here, Captain. Must be coming from outside.
Damage control. Is our lead shield leaking radiation? Well, keep at it. Paulison, how are you doing?
I've got a fix, Captain.
Well, what is it?
Well, I'll have to recheck my figures.
I'll hurry it up.
The angle is correct, but
now, come on, man, for Pete's sake. Where's the radiation coming from?
Sir, it's coming from inside the ship.
Well, that's impossible.
No, sir, I've checked it twice.
Well, it's got to be the engines, then.
If it is, sir, we're finished.
Engine room.
Yes, sir.
That radiation must be in the overdrive pile.
No, sir, it isn't here, sir.
Are you certain?
Yes, sir.
All right, keep checking. Well, there's only one thing left to do. Paulison, get a Geiger counter. We're going to start combing this ship inch by inch.
Yes, sir.
All right, turn it on.
Yes, sir. All right. Ready, Captain.
We'll check the atomic guns first. Come on. We'll cut through the officer's quarters here to ordnance. Now turn here.
Oh, well, wait a minute, sir.
Huh? What is it?
The signal's weaker now.
Yeah. Let's go back. Hold it. Hold it. Seems strongest right about here.
Oh, it doesn't make sense.
Whose cabin is this?
Lieutenant Collier's.
Collier?
Oh, he's down in nap control, sir.
Oh, I'll try the door.
Well, it's not locked, sir. Oh, it's in here, all right. Listen to that counter. Strongest over here.
Open that wall cabinet.
It's locked,
I'll
sir.
I'll smash it. Now, shut off that Geiger counter. Now, what do you make of this, Paulison?
Well, it looks like some sort of portable transmitter, sir. Must be foreign manufacture. I don't recognize the calibration symbols at all. I've never seen anything like it.
Which raises a small question. What is Lieutenant Collier doing with a transmitter in his cabin?
I don't know, sir.
Well, I intend to find out, Paulison. Get down to nav control and bring Collier up to the bridge on the double.
Well, hadn't we better find some way to shut this thing off first?
I know a way. Lieutenant Collier, I'm going to ask a few simple questions, and I want a few simple answers.
Yes, sir.
What were you doing with a transmitter in your cabin?
Transmitter, Captain?
Oh, you know nothing about it.
Well, no, sir, I don't.
Do you recognize these calibration symbols?
No, sir.
Can you think of how it might have been placed in your cabin without your knowing it?
No, sir, unless someone came in while I was on duty.
Would that have been possible?
I suppose so, if someone had a key.
I found your cabin door unlocked.
Well, I meant a key to the wall cabinet.
I didn't say the wall cabinet.
Well, I...
You what, Lieutenant? How could you have known it was in the wall cabinet?
Well, I just assumed, sir.
Lieutenant Collier, I find it hard to believe you would lie. Having known and respected your father, having observed the way you handle your job. However, I intend to get to the root of this thing. May I have your wristwatch, Lieutenant?
Sir?
Your wristwatch.
Yes, sir.
Paulison, turn on that Geiger counter.
Yes, sir.
Hold this watch next to it.
Yes, sir.
That's all. Lieutenant, if you hadn't any close contact with that transmitter, how do you explain the radioactivity of this watch?
Well, I don't, sir.
I think you'd better. To whom were you sending those signals?
Condition red! Condition red!
There's your answer, Captain.
What is this, Collier?
Alien spaceship approaching! Alien spaceship approaching!
Collier, who's aboard that ship? All right, now talk!
Very well, Captain. My mission seems completed.
Your mission? Are you admitting that you're an agent of a foreign power?
I'm stating it.
What nation?
No nation, Captain.
What?
I am an agent of the Voltan government.
Now, what?
The government of the planet of Volta.
You're crazy.
Are you so stupid, Captain? Did you think your people are the only ones who can invade another planet?
What do you mean?
We've had agents operating on Earth since 1945.
I don't believe you.
What do you think happened to those five ships, Captain? Where do you suppose we got our information? Your language, your culture, family background.
Your appearance, you look like...
Like Commander Collier? Well, is that so surprising, Captain?
You see, Captain, we had a living model.
I ought to kill you.
That would be very foolish, Captain. I would advise you to surrender without delay.
Alien ship now coming in water frame.
I'll deal with you later, Collier. Paulison?
Yes, sir.
Put this man in irons. Take him away.
Don't worry, sir. We'll take good care of him.
Carpenter! Robinson!
Gunnery.
Gunnery, Richardson.
What's the range?
10,000 meters. They're closing fast.
Put your guns on radar tracking.
Tracking. Coming on the bearing.
Fire! Fire, Richardson. Richardson, did you hear me? Fire! What's the matter down there? Did you hear me? Richardson, answer me.
It's no use to shout, Captain.
Collier, how did you get loose? Where's Paulison?
Lieutenant Paulison is dead.
All stations! Lieutenant Collier has escaped. Seize him, men!
Don't waste your breath. Your men can't hear you, Captain.
What?
Those still alive are my men.
You're lying!
No, Captain. Every ship that has ever left Earth was controlled by a Voltan crew.
That's impossible. Those were handpicked men.
Handpicked by us.
I don't believe you.
No? Then why not call for help?
Carpenter, Robinson, Haley, report.
You see, Captain?
Carpenter! Robinson! Haley!
It's quite useless, Captain. I would advise you to sit very quietly and do nothing.
Very well, Collier. You've beaten us. What now?
The ship will be taken to Volta for, shall we say, further experimentation.
I see. Of course, there's one thing you hadn't counted on.
Just what is that, Captain?
Listen! Carpenter! Are you in there, Lieutenant Carpenter? They can't all be dead. There must be one alive. Smitty! Dr. Smithson! Smitty! Smitty, what have they done to him?
Lewis,
dirty...
I
don't talk.
I must lean closer. There's not much time. Lewis, space blues.
Space blues? What is it, Smitty? What are you trying to tell me?
All men with space blues. Voltans.
Hello, let me help you.
Oh, Lewis, get message back to Earth. Voltan, fifth column. Watch out for space blues.
Smitty. Oh, Smitty.
Captain Thorson. Captain Thorson, you can't hide from us now. Come back to the bridge and surrender. Or my men will come and get you.
Hello. Hello. Star Cloud calling Earth. Oh, please, God, let me get through before it's too late. Hello. Star Cloud to Earth. Come in, please. Come in, please.
Hello. Hello. Star Cloud to Earth. Captain Thorson calling. Charlie, come in, please. Hurry.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me, Charlie?
Skipper, is that you?
Are you getting my signal?
It's coming in a little louder now, Skip. Keep sending.
My God. Now, look, Charlie, listen to me. Not much time. Get word to Colonel Harrison. Crew mutinied. Most of crew members, Voltans.
What?
Voltans.
Spell that.
V-O-L-T.
Voltans.
That's right. They're from the planet Volta.
Skipper. Skipper, are you all right?
Now, Charlie, this is serious. They'll be here any second. Now, listen. They have a fifth column on Earth. They're planning to invade you.
You mean it?
Of course I mean it. Tell Harrison, posing as humans. You can detect them by space blues. You got that? Only Voltans get space blue. Charlie, did you hear me?
Space blue. I get you.
They're breaking in, Charlie. I'm depending on you. Warn everybody.
Captain.
They've opened the door. So long, Charlie. Tell Harrison.
Captain. Captain Thorson. Hello. Hello, Star Cloud.
What's the trouble, Sergeant?
I was just trying to raise a Star Cloud, Colonel.
I had any luck?
No, sir. No contact.
No contact, eh?
No, sir.
Nearly an hour since they hit the galactic barrier. I don't understand why they haven't tried to get a message back.
No, sir. Neither do I.
Oh, all right. I'll take over for a while.
Yes, you do that, sir. It's all yours.
Right. Oh, and Charlie, you better go out and get yourself some coffee. You look a little blue around the gills.
Tonight, X-1 has brought you No Contact, written by George Lefferts from an original story of Lefferts and Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Louis Van Ruten as Captain, Donald Buca as Collier, Wendell Holmes as Charlie, and Bill Griffiths, Bill Smith, Matt Crowley, and Ken Williams. Your announcer, Don Pardo. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production. Now, next week. When you want to take over a world, you naturally look for its weak point, some way to catch its people off guard. We live in a world where everybody loves a parade, a world of press agents and publicity stunts. But who would ever dream that invaders from outer space would take advantage of that weakness and actually hire a press agent to advertise their coming? Who would believe it was anything but just another publicity gag? At least, not until the terrible moment when it was already too late. The moment of X-1.
Furry Friends Rescue is an all-volunteer, non-profit companion animal rescue organization for San Francisco Bay Area. FFR rescues dogs and cats of all ages, from bottle babies to seniors, and special medical needs from animal shelters, and home fosters over 120 dogs and cats year-round until they're adopted. FFR saves about 1,000 animals per year. We assist 70 animal shelters and other rescues via our website. Since November 1998, we have helped save over 12,000 dogs and cats. Please visit our website for more information at www.furryfriendsrescue.org.
This public service announcement is brought to you by your friends at Mutiny Radio.
It was a hunt through a jungle of city streets.
with danger waiting at every intersection, until halfway through when the hunters became the hunted, and death brought an end to the game.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Grim Hunters.
The morning paper had headlined Prices Rising. My bank statement in the afternoon mail had warned balance falling, and I had wasted the evening on behalf of a client who ran out on me when I tried to collect. All of which added up to the end of the day and me unhappy in my office at 10 p.m., with one hand on my checkbook and the other one raised in almost solemn oath. I, Philip Marlowe, private detective and too often public servant, hereby resolve to one way or another jockey my budget into something close to equilibrium. And from this day Hello. Marlowe speaking.
My name is Helen Palmer, Marlowe. I need your help badly.
Yeah, but look,
I'm up at 8700 Magnolia Terrace in the Hollywood Hills. Now, please, drop whatever you're doing and... No. No. No!
I must have let go of the phone, grabbed my hat and coat, open and close the office door, piled into my car outside and raced up into the Hollywood Hills because... The next thing I remember after Helen Palmer's scream was swinging off North Bronson Drive onto Magnolia Terrace. But a minute later, when I screeched to a stop away from number 8700, scrambled out from under the wheel and started on the run for the front door, I was no longer sure of anything. Because the house in question, a stock southern mansion complete with stable boy statue in the gravel driveway, which according to the book should have been as dark and as quiet as the inside of a coffin, was anything else but... And when I got to the oversized bronze door knocker and dropped it hard, I was beginning to doubt that I had the right address.
Can I be of some assistance, sir?
I don't know. I'm looking for a woman named Helen Palmer who called me at my office. Said she needed help. And a second after that, she...
Screamed, huh? Tell me, sir, what is your name and occupation?
In that order, Philip Marlowe, private detective.
Good for Helen, good for...
Happy, aren't you? What's going on here? What is this?
Why, it's a party, sir. A scavenger hunt. It looks like Helen Palmer's the
winner. Now, wait a minute, laughing boy. I had a call that was interrupted by pistol shots, and I...
All just part of the play, sir.
Yeah, Helen Palmer had to bring back one private detective.
Oh. Yeah, you see, Marlowe, each list, aside from the usual hard-to-find objects, had a human being on it.
That's right. I had to bring back a Hoover vacuum cleaner salesman, and believe it or not, he's already sold our good host, Thaddeus Grover, the deluxe model.
Yes, sir, he did it bad. You see, Mr. Marlowe, Helen Palmer wasn't permitted to actually hire you. That's why she had to pretend to be in trouble.
With a net result that I nearly broke my neck getting up here. Mr. Grover, where is Miss Palmer?
Well, I don't know for sure, Marlowe. She called just a bit ago and said that she only had to catch on to you and one other item and would be back after that.
Which makes her the winner, Mr. Marlowe, because none of us did better than half our list. By the by, you don't happen to have the breech lock of a 57-millimeter anti-tank gun with you.
At the moment, no. Nor do I have time for scavenger hunters.
Not even when they most cordially invite you in with the finest serving of party-style southern fried chicken imaginable. Come on, Mr. Marlowe.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I...
Come on. It's delicious chicken.
Well, okay, the chicken did it. The inside of Thaddeus Grover's house was also a stock southern mansion from a giant cut glass punch bowl. Belonged to my mother, sir, first lady of Atlanta, Georgia, sir, to a wide and winding colonial staircase. It left you expecting the descent of Scarlett O'Hara at any moment. There was one strange note in the soft southern surroundings. Piled 3 feet high in the middle of the room were the crazy quilt results of the evening scavenger hunt, including a wooden cigar store Indian, a pair of Hickok suspenders from a local fire chief, one red motorcycle, a stuffed owl, a set of antlers, and more. And behind all that, my counterparts, the bring-em-back-alive items from each list, a streetcar conductor in uniform, a waiter bald and under 40, a schoolteacher red-headed and over 50. But I was the center of attention. But Thaddeus introduced one after another of the guests to the genuine, 100% non-shrinkable private detective.
And now, Mr. Marlowe, sir, a very special friend of mine. At 31, sir, the president of Sample and Claiborne, best building contractors in the city of Los Angeles.
Oh, that's so very interesting, Mr. Grover.
Yeah, moreover, Mr. Marlowe, Sample made it right to the top in the past 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, ever since old Joshua Claiborne got killed falling off a scaffold.
He did.
Of course, between you and me and the gatepost, some folks say it was suicide. Oh, Larry! I'd like you to meet Mr. Marlowe, private detective. Mr. Marlowe, Larry Sample.
How do you do?
Hello, Mr. Marlowe. Glad you're with us. Thaddeus, has Rhonda called in yet? Last time I heard from her was when we split our list in two, and she headed out after a Latin American rumba team.
Well, if she went after her boss, she'll bring her back. That's Rhonda Langley we're speaking of, Mr. Marlowe, Larry's lady friend.
Oh?
Nicest person I know. Except, of course, my fiancée, Helen.
Helen is in Palmer, my patron, Mr. Grover.
Yes, sir, one and the same, sir. Well, we certainly have a lot of fun, even if we don't make much money, eh, Marlowe?
Yeah, you certainly... Mr. Grover, did you say money?
Most surely did, boy. You know, dollars and cents.
Yes, well, gentlemen, you'll excuse me, please, but I do have to run. Good night, Mr. Sample.
Huh?
And Mr. Grover, sir, it's been a distinct pleasure, sir. I bid you goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, sir. Your card.
I got back to my office, which I had left lights on and unlocked. My telephone was ringing. At this late hour, gullible me took faint hope that it could be a client who might still save the day. When I picked up the receiver...
Marlowe?
I let go of that straw fast.
Marlowe?
It was Detective Lieutenant Ibarra.
Marlowe, do you know a girl named Helen Palmer?
Helen Palmer? Ibarra, don't tell me there's a pair of somewhat flat feet on the lady's scavenger hunt list.
Very funny, Phil. Now, do you know her?
No, not beyond a panicked telephone call that ended in a make-believe scream and a couple of pistol shots. All designed to bring me running to a party at 8700 Magnolia Terrace.
Mm-hmm. Well, that adds all right, because the only items not checked off a list are a night watchman's badge and one detective private, which must be you, since your name is circled in the classified directory here in this phone booth.
Here in what phone booth? Where are you, Ibarra?
At a closed filling station on Van Ness off Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Why is the girl's list there with you?
Because it's clenched in her right hand, Phil, and she's folded up on the floor of this booth, dead.
Oh, no.
2 bullet holes in her back.
Oh, yeah, but Ibarra, her call was a gag.
The shots weren't. Anyhow, it looks like a stick-up since the lady's purse is gone and a wino we
Who?
Picked up... A wino we picked up saw what he calls a curly-headed guy with short legs do it and run. Also, the wino says that the murderer had been hanging around for a couple of hours like he was looking for a well-to-do prospect.
Yeah, I know, but it's still kind of strange. Me getting that call, I mean. Well, I'll drop around to headquarters tomorrow morning, Lieutenant, if you need any statement from me.
I think you'd better make that tonight, Phil. At the 8700 address. I'm sending Mooney up there now.
Oh, but wait a minute, Ibarra. You don't need me, and I do need business. If you think I'm going to get it by...
Phil.
Huh?
Phil, let's say that I'd appreciate it if you'd show for a few minutes. Okay?
No. Well, okay. A few minutes. Just so long as you appreciate it. Goodbye. Driving back to Magnolia Terrace, I used Detective Lieutenant Ibarra as an oversized whipping boy for the day's disappointments. So when I finally braked to a stop behind a half-parked squad car, which meant that Police Officer Mooney was already on hand, I was about back to normal. But then in the next quick moment, I forgot all about Ibarra because in the shadows ahead, sneaking away from a side entrance to number 8700, and looking as guilty as Lucretia Borgia leaving a corner pharmacy, was a young lady, brunette and beautiful. She hurried directly to a gray Nash parked in the rear and, without looking back, climbed in and took off. Following her had to be more fun than conversation with Mooney. Ten minutes later, the lady came to a stop in front of a dark, politely landscaped cottage on North Ogden Drive. In another two, she was inside and the light was on. When I got to the front door and leaned against the bell, a card over it said... that this could be one Rhonda Langley, Mr. Larry Sample's girlfriend. But that same card also gave another name, Helen Palmer, the lady dead phone booth. I rang again. When the door opened, it was the brunette, still beautiful. Only this time, something had been added. In her right hand, a .45, ugly and pointed straight at my head.
What do you want?
One straight answer, Miss Langley. Why did you run away from 8700 Magnolia Terrace? And a cop with routine questions.
Wait a minute. Who are you? How do you know my name?
I'm a private detective, labeled Philip Marlowe. item number 8 on the late Miss Palmer's list. And I know about you because I've already been to Thaddeus Grover's party. Now, after you put this gun away, we'll get back to my question. Why'd you run? Come on, talk, lady, now before I yell copper.
Well, all right. Come in.
Thanks.
Mr. Marlowe, I don't think Helen Palmer's murder was any run-of-the-mill robbery.
You don't think what?
I stayed just long enough to hear the policeman say Helen had been killed.
Oh. When I got to your welcome mat, I was greeted with a .45. Talk some more, Miss Langley. Real plain-like,
well,
right, huh?
Give me half a chance, will you? I didn't say anything to the police about this because I don't want to do any damage before I'm sure about a few things.
Like what?
Like the kind of a mess that Helen was in. Mr. Marlowe, I need help. I've got to know some facts. Please, will you work for me? I'll pay you anything.
Well, at this point, let's call anything 25 a day in expenses, huh? About Helen and the mess you spoke of, how much do you know?
Very little. Only that I think Helen was blackmailing somebody. Somebody who was at the party tonight.
Like Grover, your boyfriend Larry Sample?
I don't know. Oh, you've got to believe me, Mr. Marlowe.
Well, all right. For the time being, I will. Now, first of all, how'd you latch onto this blackmail?
Well, yesterday morning, I accidentally overheard Helen talking to someone on the telephone. She spoke of a payoff that was to be made at Thaddeus's party. I don't know who she was talking to, but she warned the person not to try anything rash.
As in murder?
She didn't say. But she did say that she'd already airmailed a letter to her lawyers in San Francisco that would protect her from any harm. And she laughed about the scheduled scavenger hunt and hung up.
Mm-hmm. You said nothing to her about this, huh?
Well, no, I was afraid...
All right, the letter to San Francisco. Did you see her mail it?
Well, I mailed it myself earlier in the day along with one of my own.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about it until after her call when she pointedly asked me if I'd remembered to mail a letter. My letter, that is. Which she knew that I'd written to an aunt I have in Passaic, New Jersey.
Well?
Well, that's the whole story. If you want me, I'll be over at Thaddeus's place.
Thaddeus?
Yes, he was in love with Helen.
Yeah. Maybe she was returning that love with blackmail. What do you think, Rhonda?
I don't know. The thinking is now your job, Mr. Marlowe.
When I left Rhonda Langley and started back to my car as a bona fide private detective with client, I wasn't sure whether or not I was happy about the whole thing. But a second later, at the sight of a man in the dark ahead, half crouched behind a tree, I quit deliberating the point and got ready for trouble because, from what I could see, the gentleman in hiding had both the curly hair and very short legs that Ibarra had mentioned as a sign of Helen Palmer's killer. I kept walking straight until I was abreast of the tree, then I pivoted sharply, took one step toward him, and swung! Come on, brother.
Why, you dirty...
You haven't got the time. Hey, believe me.
Enough, fella. Enough. Will you leave me alone?
Sure. Sure I will. After you start talking. Now, get up.
Okay. Okay, don't hit me again. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything. Hey, look there. No. No, don't. Oh, that lousy nut.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. But first, you can do a lot of singing for $14,500, so they say. And tonight, some CBS listener may be able to speak with authority on the subject because $14,500 is what's waiting for whoever can solve the mystery behind the new phantom voice on CBS's great Saturday night quiz game, Sing It Again. Listeners from coast to coast will be quizzed by telephone about the new phantom's identity. And they'll also be given a chance to win one of the other famous prizes for solving the riddle songs which feature Sing It Again's Hour of Saturday Night Fun. Hear Sing It Again on most of these same CBS network stations tonight and every Saturday night. Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Grim Hunters.
Shots crashed out of the darkness. The life ran out of the little man like air from a kid's balloon. I couldn't figure exactly where the shots had come from, and I stopped trying when a pair of spiked heels clicked fast across the concrete driveway between me and the house. Then a motor started, and a second later, a car roared by with Rhonda Langley at the wheel. I yelled at her to stop as she went by and ran out in the street after her and yelled again at the retreating car. But she ignored me. When another car came around the curve behind me, I tried to flag it down, but the driver didn't even slow up. So I just stood there while the two cars twisted out of sight down the winding street. leaving nothing but silence and a lot of unanswered questions hanging in midair. I walked back to the corpse, went over it carefully. But there was no identification, nothing but a gun to indicate how he fitted into the screwy mosaic of murder, scavenging, and blackmail. I went inside to call Ibarra, and 5 minutes of tracers, relays, and busy signals went by before I finally got through to him with my news about Helen Palmer's killer.
What? Where are you, Marlowe?
In a house on Ogden Drive, 4310 North. It was shared by Helen Palmer, my new client, Rhonda Langley.
Did she kill my suspect, Marlowe?
Could be. She left here in a big hurry. Another thing, Ibarra, there's more behind this business than robbery.
Like what?
Like blackmail.
Maybe so. We just found a Palmer's girl handbag in a trash can. Nothing left but a lipstick and two letters. Incidentally, one is addressed to your client, Rhonda Langley.
That figures. They shared the house, so Helen happened to pick up the day's mail. What's the other letter?
It was one returned for insufficient postage. They forgot that airmail is 6 cents these days.
Return? Wait a minute. Is that letter addressed to a law firm in San Francisco?
No, it's addressed to Sophie Kilberty.
Sophie Kill who?
Kilberty of Passaic, New Jersey. Why?
Well, Ibarra, listen. Helen was blackmailing somebody, and she covered herself by mailing a letter to her lawyers in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
If that letter was returned for insufficient postage and the blackmail victim knew it, he'd have no qualms about killing her, right?
Sure, but the letters were in Helen's purse.
Oh.
Don't you think she'd have known her protection was gone? Phil, I'm going to put out a pickup call on your client. And you get on down here so we can go over this mess one step at a time.
Where's here?
Still at the gas station on Van Ness off Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay, Barra. How long are you going to be there?
Just until Thaddeus Grover shows up to identify the body and give me some answers personally about that scavenger hunt he threw tonight.
What about this curly-headed corpse I've got here?
Have you gone over him?
Yeah. Nothing but a gun, some small bills on him.
Then he'll keep. I'll expect you in a few minutes.
Okay. So long, Ibarra. When I put down the phone, I was convinced that a big switch was due any minute because finding those letters in Helen Palmer's purse made a lot of sense in one direction and not a bit in another. I could have made more heads and tails by flipping a ball bearing than I got out of the facts Ibarra had given me. Just then, the shadow of a man slid up the walk. I heard a pair of feet mount the stairs, two at a time. It was the Wonder Boy executive I'd met at the party.
Better hold it right there, Sample.
What? Marlowe. Why the gun?
So the same thing won't happen to me that happened to the dead little guy outside?
Another murder? Marlowe, where's Rhonda? Is she all right?
She left here as fast as an 8-cylinder motor wide open could move just after it happened.
Then it was Rhonda I saw. On my way over here, a speeding car almost crowded me off the road. It looked like Rhonda's, but I wasn't sure. And Marlowe, she was being chased by another car, a fast one.
Chased, are you sure?
Yes. The first car missed me by inches when it swung around a curve. I don't know yet how she made it. Then a second car came along and passed the curve, but it stopped, backed up, and then took the same road Rhonda had taken.
You think she got away?
I don't know.
Well, come on outside, Sample. I want you to take a look at this. By the way, how long have you known Rhonda?
About a year.
Mm-hmm.
She's a brilliant girl, Marlowe. Came out from the East, and I gave her a job as my secretary.
She's more than that now, huh?
I'm in love with her, if that's what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, here it is.
Well, Marlowe, I know this man. That's Nate Murdoch. He used to be a foreman with our firm. He left and went back to Atlanta right after Claiborne's death.
Atlanta? Isn't your host Thaddeus Grover from Atlanta?
Why, yes, he is.
Oh, brother. When did you see Grover last?
Well, the police asked him to go and identify Helen's body. He left the party while the officer was still questioning the rest of us.
Yeah, and on the way, he could have taken time off to drop by here, kill Murdoch, and make a try for Rhonda, too. Come on, let's get to the phone.
But why, Marlowe? Good heavens, Grover's our friend. He and Helen were engaged to be married.
All right, so it doesn't make sense. But his fiancée and his short friend from Atlanta are both dead. And Rhonda's burning the tires off a car to keep out of reach. Those are the facts. It'll make sense later. Now, call Grover's place and hurry up.
Yes.
That's where she intended to go when she left here, to console him, no less. Scavenger hunt my Aunt Minnie.
Hello? Hello, is Mr. Grover there? No? Well, has Miss Langley arrived yet? Oh, it's the maid, Marlowe.
Mm-hmm.
Rhonda, what's that? She's coming up the walk now? Hold the line a minute, please. She just got there, Marlowe. What'll I tell her?
Tell her to leave again. Tell her... No, where do you live?
4406 Ardmore.
All right. Tell her I said for her to wait outside in the back of the house until you can get over there to pick her up. Take her to your place, and I'll pin Grover down.
Right. Where are you going now?
See Lieutenant Ibarra, and I can get there faster than I can call him on the phone. Good luck, Sample. Sample was repeating my name over to Grover's maid on the phone as I left. And a few minutes later, at the mobile gas station off Hollywood Boulevard, I found Ibarra looking sardonic in the blinking light from a flying red neon horse above his head as he flipped through a stack of papers on top of an oil drum.
It's about time, Arlo. Where's that client of yours?
Now, wait a minute, Ibarra. I had her pegged all wrong. She's a pigeon. Has Thaddeus Grover been here yet?
Just left. He's quite a character, that guy.
You didn't let him get away alone.
Yes, he was... What do you mean, get away?
Ibarra, there's a big connection between Thaddeus Grover and Murdoch, the guy who killed Helen. Now, Grover might have hired him for the job, and now he's trying to get Rhonda.
Now, Marlowe, how does that figure?
It doesn't, but so help me, Ibarra, that's the way it is.
Well, Grover was heading for his friend Larry Sample's house, and he left. Happened to know where Sample...
Holy smoke, that's exactly where I told Sample to take the girl. 4406 Ardmore.
Well, that's great, Marlowe. They'll all be together in one place. I'll pick up the whole crew in right now.
You're going to pick up the pieces, you mean?
You think there'll be a showdown?
Any minute, Ibarra, it can't miss.
Okay, so we'll take some firepower along. Hemigalda, Gray, yeah, let's go. Yeah. Come on, Phil.
Now look, Ibarra, maybe Sample hasn't gotten home with Rhonda yet. I'll go up to Grover's and try to head them off, okay?
Okay, Marlowe. But if you get them before I do, bring them in and no alibis. I'll see you.
Ibarra was grim as he climbed in his car and drove off fast. I headed for my car, then as I turned, my arm swept the scavenger list Ibarra had left on the oil drum off onto the ground. When I picked them up, Rhonda Langley's name was on top. Her list was as goony as the others, but near the bottom was an item strangely familiar to me, which hadn't been checked off. It was a canceled ticket from Woodhaven Ballroom. All at once, I realized why it was familiar. The sign I'd been half conscious of on top of the big squat building across the street read, Woodhaven Ballroom, closed tonight. On a hunch, I dug for Helen Palmer's list. Yeah, Ibarra was right. Everything but a night watchman's badge and one detective private had been checked off. And that gave me half of the switch I knew I had to show up. I ran to my car and headed for that southern mansion in the Hollywood Hills. And the end of a very complicated frolic. And with every turn of the road, I gave myself another whack for being such a nearsighted sucker. When I got there, the big house on Magnolia Terrace was dark, except for a light in the servants' quarters. I stepped down the block, walked back, and edged around to the patio where the garage, the hothouse, and the king-size barbecue loomed only as shapeless lumps of shadow. I stood still and watched. Then I saw him move, walking slowly, gun in hand along the fence toward the hothouse. I started toward him quietly, just as he found out what he was looking for.
Oh, you're clever, my dear. But it's all over now. I know you're in there, so come on out with your hands up.
Oh, no. You're hanging yourself for murder right now, Larry Sample. I've got all the proof I need.
I don't know what good it'll do you, Rhonda. I'll never pay you a cent for it, you blackmailing tramp. I'll kill you first. And that protection letter you wrote to your lawyers was returned, darling. I found it accidentally in Helen's purse tonight at the party. So no one will know. Now come on out or I'm going in after you.
I wouldn't try that if I were you, Sample. Marlowe's due here any minute now. He called me and told me.
That was I, dear.
You?
I used his name when I talked to the maid. Oh, I should have done this myself in the first place instead of trusting that stupid Murdoch. Are you going to come out of there?
No, and I've got a gun.
You can't see me, and I know it. Your white dress makes a perfect target, you little fool.
Drop it, Sample. Now let's have that gun.
Marlowe, I'm so glad you got here.
He's not dead.
Oh.
And he won't be, from bullets. Give me your gun, too, huh? Come on.
All right. I was too scared to use it anyway.
Thanks. Now sit down and shut up. We're going to wait for Lieutenant Ibarra, then you're both going to the pokey.
What?
Listen, you, I don't go for blackmailers, male or female. Even the cute ones are ugly, lady. Very ugly.
Oh, Phil, wait. You've got to understand something. 2 years ago, Larry Sample killed his partner, Joshua Claiborne. I knew it, but I couldn't prove it. So I pretended I could and blackmailed him. Don't you see? If he paid off or tried to kill me, that would be proof of his guilt. And he did, Marlowe.
Mm-hmm. Why should you pull a stunt like that?
I'm a divorcee, Marlowe. Langley is only my married name.
Okay, so what?
My maiden name was Claiborne.
Claiborne?
I'm Josh Claiborne's daughter.
Oh.
And I can prove that. Is that reason enough?
Well, why didn't you level with me instead of labeling Helen a blackmailer?
Helen was already dead, and I needed your help desperately. I thought I had to lie to get it. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, baby.
Anyone care for more coffee? How about you, Lieutenant?
Oh, no thanks, Mr. Grover. Well, Marlowe, you got it all to come out even anyway. Frankly, that's more than I expected when I left you at that gas station.
Yeah, we were lucky, Burr. I guess I owe you an apology, Mr. Grover.
Oh, Jack, that's all right, son. Well, it's a shock to me to be accused of poor Helen's murder, but, well, it's over now.
Yeah.
You said it was the scavenger list that set you straight. How'd you figure that, boy?
Well, there was a Woodhaven ballroom ticket on Rhonda's list, so she had to go there for the ticket, you see.
Uh-huh.
Now, Sample knew that. And he told his killer, Murdoch, who incidentally he hired to murder Claiborne 2 years ago, that the girl who went to the Woodhaven ballroom was his target.
Uh-huh.
But Helen happened to go there after the night watchman's badge.
Which he could have picked up any place in town.
Yeah.
What a terrible coincidence for Helen. That was all that saved my life, really.
That's right, honey. Murdoch made the mistake, and when he and Sample discovered it, they made another try at Rhonda's house. But I caught Murdoch there, so Sample shot him before he could talk.
And when I left, he followed me in his car. I knew they were after me, and I thought for sure they'd killed you, Phil. That's why I ran.
Yeah, that threw me for a loop. Then Sample came back to make sure that Murdoch was dead and sold me a great big bill of goods at the same time.
Oh, it's a terrible, terrible thing.
Yes, Mr. Grover, it is.
Lieutenant, I want to thank you personally for your participation.
Thank you very much. Well, I've got everything I need, so I'll say goodnight.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, Phil.
Yeah?
Shall I mail you a check?
Why, yes, I think... No, wait a minute.
Yes?
You know, honey, with your knowledge of postal rates, why don't you just deliver it in person, maybe, huh?
Love to. Count on it, Mr. Marlowe. Good night.
Drove down from the Hollywood Hills with a check warming my wallet and the echo of a soft invitation warming my imagination. You know, that was quite a party at Grover's house. Scavenger hunt. People determined to have a good time even if it killed them. You know what? It did. I know another game. Associations. It goes like this. Grover's party. Rhonda Langley. Rhonda... Date. I wonder if she likes baseball.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman McDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Ellen Reed, Mary Shipp, Jack Moyles, Richard Benedict, and Lorette Philbrant. Lieutenant Detective Ibarra is played by Jeff Corey. The special music is by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
They were born on the same hour and the same day of the same parents, and they were identical in beauty and talent. Only one was deadly, and the other was not.